get into a real estate of mind right here with Think Realty Radio, hosted by Abhi Golhar. Breaking down the latest market news, tips, and strategies, Abhi Golhar is nationally recognized for his real estate expertise. It's only on Think Realty Radio, and it starts right now.
Think Realty Nation, it's your host, Abhi Golhar. Welcome to Think Realty Radio, the one-hour radio you're looking forward to all day, every single day. You're tuning in because you might be a business owner, an entrepreneur, a healthcare provider. You're thinking, okay, I've been paying attention to the real estate market a little bit. I've been seeing and eyeing some very interesting news, and now I want to dive in and buy something. I want to buy an investment property. So on the show, we talk about all the investing strategies you need to succeed. And from time to time, I bring on folks that have a very unique perspective on the market. My regular guest today, his name's Noel Christopher. He's the Senior Vice President of Corporate Development at renterswarehouse.com. So check him out, renterswarehouse.com. Noel, I think I did a pretty good job of saying all of these things without stumbling over my words until the very end. And also, we talk about markets a whole lot. When Noel and I call each other offline, we're talking about ideas and strategies and markets and news and fake news and what's being talked about and what's not being talked about. And we have a couple of articles that we've spooled up here that we do want to talk about. On MarketWatch.com, there's a story, there's an opinion piece talking about why bubble area home mortgages are a disaster waiting to happen, why bubble-era home mortgages are a disaster waiting to happen. Noel, first of all, welcome to the show. Excited to kind of have this conversation with you. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here.
And so kick us off here. Why is this article so relevant?
So, you know, I first off, I spent a ton of time looking at a lot of the real estate news and then spending a lot of time debunking some of the, you said it, fake news on the housing market and why we're not in a bubble or why we're not, we don't have a looming housing crash or why by, I mean, I'm seeing some stuff coming out saying, well, watch out for 2025.
Right.
It's a long time away. So
it's like, what's going to happen in 2025? I remember like 3 years ago they said, watch out for 2019 and 2020. I mean, come on.
Yep. So, you know, it's kind of gets into what's the new normal. That's really the question that we have to ask ourselves. We're not, you know, you can't really compare to what was happening 5 years ago or what's happening a year ago because we've been in this, you know, rapid appreciation and this rapid housing increase. And things are cooling off, people aren't selling their homes, and there's a lot of different things happening. But there are some things that could affect the future market, and I found this really interesting piece. And I think, you know, I do agree, I think it's an opinion piece for sure. And that's really the big differentiator as well, is this, are these opinions or is this fact? Some people put them out there as fact, and then when you really get into it, it's really just an opinion.
Right.
And I'm not a journalist, so I see that, like, it just drives me crazy.
Right.
But this one was very interesting because it's talking about non-agency mortgages. And, you know, when you dive kind of deeper into some of this stuff, it's really about when they're reporting mortgage delinquencies, what are they reporting? So is it Fannie Mae, Fannie Freddie type mortgage delinquencies? Is it from FHFA? Is it from HUD? All these different things. These are non-agencies, non-agency loans, loans that were not backed by Fannie and Freddie that were securitized. And this article is talking about loans that that somebody hasn't made a mortgage payment for 5 or more years. And it's really interesting when you look at some of these markets, and it doesn't surprise me when I look at these markets. A market like Chicago has 108,000 non-agency loans out there, and 24% of them are delinquent. Serious delinquent, 5 or more years delinquency. So it's
so
you
hold
know,
on, hold
you
on.
Look at the top.
There are loans out there that are five. There's still 5+ years delinquent. What are people doing about this? I mean, you talk about inventory coming back. I mean, yeah, like I love this. This is great. You're telling me Chicago has 108,408 outstanding loans, of which 24% are seriously delinquent. I go opportunity, opportunity, opportunity. Where's like my button bar for a ding, 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 ding?
So, yeah, on the surface, You could say that, but I can tell you right now in Chicago, there's probably about 15,000 vacant buildings in Chicago.
Okay.
And I would imagine that a high percentage of them are these loans. And they are, you know, buildings that haven't been foreclosed on. It's not worth, they're really almost like bank walkaways. So the bank walks away from it, the borrower walks away, and that in the whole, you know, that zombie foreclosure. I don't know if you've heard that term before. So it's,
what's a zombie foreclosure?
A zombie foreclosure is a foreclosure just stays in this kind of this limbo for years and years and years. It's not worthwhile for the bank to continue the foreclosure. They might be missing documentation. There might be some issues with how the loan was originally put together. And so they just kind of leave it there. Now, a lot of these cities, when you look at these cities, are judicial foreclosure states, or these states. So they didn't push, they weren't able to push through their foreclosures as quickly. I know Chicago, Boston, New York City, I believe, and probably a lot of these other cities listed on this list here are judicial foreclosure states, meaning that it is not easy to push a foreclosure through. And so some of the banks just walk away, especially some of this non-agency loans, non-agency meaning that it wasn't backed by a government agency. So it's, these numbers are really interesting, and it's almost alarming to see them. My initial thought was yours was great. Well, we're talking about affordability and supply. Well, here's a bunch of, you know, there's a million homes right here.
Yeah.
That could help supply. But you have to look at it, in these more urban areas, these might just be vacant houses that aren't worth much. You know, these are definitely not houses that you can walk into, slap some paint and carpet in them, and then resell them. They're
so
probably gut rehab type homes.
Right. So you're essentially saying that these homes are not your HGTV quick turnaround. I'm going to buy at 9, rehab by 3, and move in by 6 types, right? Like these are
Correct. Seriously...
They need some serious help. And if you're interested in finding out more information about this, you can get this information directly from SIFMA, which is the Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association. And they're the ones that have reported that more than $800 billion of these bubble-era loans are still outstanding as of the third quarter of 2018. So if you just kind of take the average of the seriously delinquent percentage of these loans, and you just average that out to say 20% of these loans are seriously delinquent, that means $160 billion of loans are still seriously delinquent across the United States. Okay. So we've got to go to break in about 30 seconds. But Noel, in your eyes, is that or is that not cause for concern?
I think it's a cause for concern. Okay, let me give you an example. Detroit was one of the highest foreclosures in all of the country, foreclosure rates, and had was hit the worst of really, I think, anywhere in the history. I'm surprised that Detroit is still around, to be honest, but it's come back big time. And one of the things that they did was they tore down a lot of vacant buildings.
Yeah.
So these other cities, they haven't been able to figure that out, how to get rid of some of these. I mean, look at a place like Chicago. There's still vacant buildings from the riots in the 60s. So they're, especially these urban areas, I don't know the solution. Maybe tearing down some of these buildings, figuring out something to do with these. But a lot of these aren't necessarily people living in these houses. I'd love to see this data and see how many of these are actually occupied, and there's just a homeowner living there not paying the mortgage.
And it's really going to come back down to the one group of people that's going to do something about it. Individual investors like you and I. We'll talk more about that. We have some more news that we're going to talk about, some market trends when we come back from break. My good friend Noel Christopher, Senior Vice President of Corporate Development at RentersWarehouse.com. Good guy. Great insight. More right here on Think Realty Radio when we come back.
This hour is brought to you by Renters Warehouse, one of the largest, fastest growing, and highest reviewed property management companies in America. We'll be right back with more Think Realty Radio with Abhi Golhar after these messages.
Hi, Kevin Ortner here, CEO of Renters Warehouse. I'm guessing that many of you might be considering a move. Maybe you need to relocate, maybe you're combining households, or maybe you already own investment property. Whether you have one home or a whole portfolio, my expert team at Renters Warehouse can help you perfectly price your property and rent it out fast, easy, and worry-free in just 17 days on average. For one low flat monthly fee, our professional landlords will manage your property 24/7. We collect the rent, we handle maintenance requests, inspections, all that regulatory red tape, and we'll even warranty our tenants for up to 18 months. That means if your tenant doesn't stay for any reason, Renters Warehouse will replace them for free. There's no upfront fees, no binding contracts, and you can cancel at any time. Go to renterswarehouse.com right now to book a free home rental price analysis and see what your home will rent for today. A professional landlord will visit your property and show you personally how to rent your home fast and for top dollar.
Find out how much your home.
Attention real estate investors. Join the nation's top pros in residential and commercial investing in Baltimore at the Think Realty Conference and Expo, April 6th and 7th. Network with industry leaders and service providers and learn how to earn a higher return on your real estate investments. The Think Realty Conference and Expo in Baltimore, April 6th and 7th. Text radio to 96270. That's radio to 96270. Or visit thinkrealty.com/Baltimore to register.
Would you like to know the easiest way to create wealth and passive income with real estate? Now you can access the best deals without the stress or hassle of having to find, renovate, or manage them. Narada Real Estate Investments saves you time by providing you with professionally managed income properties in the best U.S. markets. Learn more at PassiveRealEstateGuide.com and download your free copy of The Ultimate Guide to Passive Real Estate Investing. Simply visit PassiveRealEstateGuide.com.
We're back with Think Realty Radio and your host and realty dealmaker, Abhi Golhar.
Think Realty Nation, it's Abhi Golhar. We're back with my guest, Noel Christopher, the Senior Vice President of Corporate Development at Renters Warehouse. We're talking about what's going on in the marketplace, more specifically, an article, a recent article, opinion article on MarketWatch.com about why bubble-era home mortgages are a disaster waiting to happen. Now, we just talked about outstanding loans as of February 1st, 2016. To give you an update on these numbers, there are $800 billion in loans that are delinquent as of this time, 2018. And if you take an average, 20% of these loans, so $160 billion in loans, are seriously delinquent, which means that there hasn't been a payment on these loans in the last 5 years. The top cities, the 10 worst major metro areas that reflect these types of bad loans. Number one, New York City. Two, Miami. Three, Tampa, Orlando, Honolulu, Philadelphia, Providence, Las Vegas, Chicago, and Boston. What I didn't find here, which the article also talks about, Noel, is where are the California cities? Like, where's San Francisco? Where's LA? Where's San Diego? I mean, there were really terrible underwriting standards back in 2008, 9, and 10. And even before then, right, 2006, 7, where you had ninja loans, no income, no job application. If you were dead, you were still getting loans, right? So why doesn't LA show up here? What do you think?
Well, I mean, in the article, it talks about how California is really good about modifying these loans because California was, I mean, they had the majority, they were one third of all not agency securitized loans. Mm-hmm. So, maybe they've been modified, but then if you go back and you really look at the data on modifications, 40% of them fail because you're modifying a seriously delinquent loan. You're adding, in California, for example, hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt onto the end of that loan and then giving them a lower payment. So that is interesting why it's not being reported in California. The whole point of this is that you could read this entire article, and if you don't have a little bit of more insight into it, you could make some assumptions. And I've read a lot of this, this Keith Jarrow, he writes some good stuff, but he doesn't sometimes, and I don't really blame him, sometimes you're not asking all the questions, like how many of these delinquent loans are actually occupied by somebody. Because that's a huge factor. Is this a vacant building or somebody who's living in a house who's not paying their loan? Or have they rented it out? Or what's going on? How many of these have been sold on the NPL market, which I would probably say a very high percentage of them have traded hands at some point? A lot of different things like that, that you have to ask those questions. So there's much more that I would need to know before I made an assumption that these outstanding loans were going to affect the real estate markets. I don't believe they're a disaster waiting to happen because, trust me, in Chicago, they're keenly aware of the 15,000 vacant homes that they have.
I mean, I'm sure any city would want to be aware of the vacant homes they have. I mean, you talk about a tax revenue going down the drain, right? You can assume, bust out a little calculator here. Even if it's what, $500 a year in property tax, right? Times 15,000 homes, that's $7.5 million. And you and I both know Chicago property taxes aren't $500 a house.
Right. Yeah. More like 5,000.
But exactly.
So it's just, it's interesting because you read this stuff and go, oh my gosh. And it took me a little while to read this to figure out, okay, there's millions of homes that are non-agency, and there's about 20% or maybe really closer to 25% delinquency rate. What does it mean? No telling. It really depends on how many of them are occupied and how many of these are livable buildings, because if they're not in a place like Chicago, they're worth about 10 grand a building, a house. You know, a lot of them are probably inner city areas, urban infill areas that have not come back from the housing crash. And again, I thought Detroit's solution of tearing those buildings down and just taking them out of the housing stock altogether was a smart decision. And I wish that more would do that. I'm positive the numbers in Detroit reflect that it was a good idea.
Right. So here's then a question for you. Okay. The question is very simple. You've got 20% of these $800 billion in delinquent loans. Okay. Out of which, so that number represents $160 billion nationwide. That means that this is bad debt on the books of these institutions. How do I, as an individual investor, somebody that's clamoring for inventory, right? Because I live in Atlanta, and you and I both know that major cities, primary markets right now, they're very, very, very tough to find good deals in. So what do I do? Do I have to like hound these banks and say, hey, listen, you know, the Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association is giving me all this data saying there's $160 billion in seriously delinquent loans out there. And I'm sure you're carrying a percentage. I can look at your public books and I can find out how much you're carrying on your books. I want to buy them. Is that do you feel like that's a good way to get it done?
Yeah, I wish it was that easy. The problems is that these loans have been layered and layered in different LLCs, and they've been bought and sold and traded and given and donated and everything you can possibly think of, around the markets. And so you don't know who owns them. It could be a foreign entity that owns these things. I mean, it's so crazy. I've been down this path, and these are NPLs. These are non-performing loans. That NPL market has gone crazy, and it's gone up and down and around. And so the NPL market, it used to be stuff was trading at 20% of value. Now it's our 20% of unpaid balance. Now it's trading much higher. So yes and no. Sometimes going to the economic development or the housing authority within a city. So Chicago has this database. I know they do. They have the database. They know all of these loans. And if you can get in with the right people, you can try to figure out how to take them off the hands. Some groups like National Stabilization Trust, some different groups like this, nonprofit groups will put these out and get them out. But if this many have been sitting here for 5+ years delinquent, there's some other issues with title that are not as easy. So this is not this is an expert level type of a thing to figure out if you're an investor. There's opportunity in here somewhere for sure. I know the Countrywide stuff and One World Bank loans at Wells Fargo.
Yeah,
that they bought in Chicago. I know for sure they've got it's tens of thousands in Chicago, because I've seen this stuff as of maybe 3 years ago. So I don't know what it is now, where, you know, they just, there's stuff that they're not going to try to foreclose on the homeowner. because there's some issues with the loan. So they're not going to reach out to them. But if the homeowner reaches out to them and say, hey, I want to do a short sell or I want to get out of this, they'll sell it very easily, very quickly.
Right.
And so we mined that database in Chicago 1 year and found a ton of deals for some of the hedge funds. But it was very labor intensive, and trying to track down a homeowner who hasn't been paying his mortgage for 5 years.
Oh, geez.
It's not that easy.
Yeah, no. I mean, you need access to LexisNexis, like some high grade, mm-hmm. FBI attorney
right.
level only Secret Service MI6 James Bond stuff. Like, and even then, that's why I like the tax lien investing opportunity. Right. Because you can find out who the person that owes money on their property. They're not paying it. Pay it off for them. And if they still don't get in touch over a period of time post the redemption period, you can foreclose, quiet title
right.
it, foreclose it, and then foreclose on the tax deed at that point in time. And then now you own property for pennies on the dollar. So we got to go to break. Well, I do want to talk about NPLs, non-performing loans, when we come back, just for a second, because as investors, you're looking for the next deal and the next opportunity. You talk about a wide open marketplace where investors are still clamoring for deals. It's everywhere. But NPLs could be a unique strategy. More with Noel Christopher from Renters Warehouse when we come back. Check out thinkrealtyradio.com. Click play on some of your favorite episodes, which feature me. Of course, that's what you want to do. Click play. All right, I'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more Think Realty Radio with Abhi Golhar after these messages.
National Real Estate Insurance Group is the industry leader in providing coverage customized for investors. We insure occupied, vacant, and renovation properties across all 50 states, can combine all properties on one schedule, and offer convenient pay-as-you-go monthly billing. Visit NREIG.com today for your free custom proposal. That's National Real Estate Insurance Group at NREIG.com or call 888-741-8454, 888-741-8454.
Where are successful investors turning for the latest news, trends, and insights in real estate? Think Realty Magazine. Sign up for your investor-level membership at thinkrealty.com today to start receiving Think Realty Magazine delivered to your door and inbox every month. Boost your competitive advantage with news from the nation's leading investors, market updates, the hottest investment strategies, and more. Take the next step toward building more wealth. Sign up today at thinkrealty.com.
The key to success in any industry is having a network of skilled professionals who can help you do your job effectively. The American Association of Private Lenders believes that with better resources, you get better results. By visiting the American Association of Private Lenders website, you will find the resources to put more deals together, but better deals. Who doesn't want to improve their bottom line? To find a credible private lending professional, visit AAPLonline.com today. Savvy investors make use of smart savings. Think Realty Radio listeners, you have the opportunity to save smart with Sherwin-Williams Paint. Sign up for your free Think Realty membership now and activate discounts to save up to 50% off of select Sherwin-Williams Paint. Rehabbers, investors, property managers, this is your opportunity to save big for your next project. Start saving up to 50% now. Go to thinkrealty.com/paint and then click discounts.
We're back with Think Realty Radio and your host and realty dealmaker, Abhi Golhar.
Think Realty Nation, it's Abhi Golhar. We're back. My good friend Noel Christopher from Renters Warehouse is on the air. We're talking about news. We're talking about things that are relevant to you. So let's take our thinking caps. Let's put them back on and let's get back to it. Before the break, Noel, we were talking a lot about NPLs and how this market is going pretty crazy with opportunity right now. Essentially, at the end of the day, for me as an investor, I want the edge, right? I want something that I can hang my hat on, that I know at the end of the day I can go to over and over and over and over and over again to find deals. NPLs is such an opportunity. An NPL is defined as a non-performing loan. And these are loans that have been delinquent. The individual that's responsible for paying them hasn't been paying them. And now all of a sudden they go into a non-performing status. We were just talking about how there are roughly $800 billion of these loans out there, and 20% of them are seriously delinquent, which means that they have not been paid on for more than a couple of years. So if you want to check out the NPL world, there are a lot of conferences you can attend nationwide. So a quick Google search will give you the top conferences and really have a deep understanding of this, because NPLs, again, like Noel was saying, require a lot of work. They require that next level expertise. But if you restructure them properly, you can truly, truly win by picking up this paper for pennies on the dollar that no institutional fund wants to touch, no hedge fund wants to touch, no other investor wants to touch. The bank hates them, doesn't want them. But you, the investor, can capitalize tremendously because you can turn around the note, you can work with the current payer, you can do something different so that you can win. What do you think? Are you an NPL fan?
Yeah, I am. So it's interesting. You've been at some of the same conferences I have, and even the private note market is very interesting because you are instead of owning the property and everything that comes with it, the rehab and the tenants and all those things, you're owning the note, and you have some different things you can do with that, and it's way more of a passive income than actually owning real estate. Mm. So there's something to be said for it, for sure. The public NPL market, what I mean by that are these non-agency loans that get traded back and forth. There are a ton of funds that buy those. They sell off parts of them. Lone Star bought a bunch of these securitizations and owned, and along with the federal government. I mean, it's insane how much we're out there. Mm-hmm. And it's sketchy on how many are reporting. I probably think rather than trying to find these NPLs that these banks originated with some of these sketchy mortgages, yep, that are going to be hard on title, the private NPL market is what's really interesting. So there's a lot of private, and it's not just non-performing loans. It could be performing loans as well. These get traded very, very often in that private market. And so that stuff can be real interesting because you can go in and buy these loans on the non-performing side at a great discount, go to the borrower and say, essentially I bought this for half of what it's worth. I'm going to cut what can you make for a payment? Right. And the numbers work out really well.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not trying to get them for the full amount.
That's right. I mean, you can see if you're buying at such a heavy discount, you can really turn around and see returns upwards of 14, 15, 18, 20. Like, that's how serious it can be if you do it right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's some platforms out there, and if you can Google them, in fact, I think I'm doing a podcast later today that'll be out. It's with an NPL or a note company. So it's an interesting market, and it's getting with the right people who can show you the right path to do that, and also the opportunities. So like anything, be careful of the fly-by-night education and classes. It's going to charge you a bunch of money up front.
Yep, that's right.
There's plenty out there that aren't going to charge you that educational money that you can learn from and get involved with them.
What else is cooking in the marketplace? So I think we've officially talked about this non-agency loan, the $800 billion and the 20% for a little bit. But I thought it was good to do that because it just identifies that there are still opportunities, but there's also this looming issue in the space. I've heard a lot about these re-defaults of mortgage modifications. And then there are a couple of articles. I know you sent me one to read a couple days ago, and I thought that was very interesting, also by the same individual, about how these re-defaults, folks that are defaulting again on mortgage modifications, how that could impact the housing market. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think it's going to have a major impact, no impact at all? Is it just another, let's just sweep this under the rug?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a major impact. I think for one of the main reasons is that the banks and lenders, they're so much more mature in how they can deal with these and get ahead of them because of the housing bubble. Mm. I mean, the housing recession the last time. So they're more sophisticated in what they can do on dealing with this stuff and seeing it coming. I would be really surprised if there was something that happened that would just cause this huge crash that some people are predicting. So you've got people that are predicting, saying there's going to be a slowdown, maybe even a little bit of a decline or leveling off, and things are going to kind of go along. And then what'll happen, you know, after 2 or 3 years, we can't really predict. And then there's some that are saying we hit a trough back in 2009. The peak was about 2005, 2006. Everything went down. The federal government stopped that decline by lowering the interest rates, which I don't think that really was the case. I think it was the institutional buyers coming in and setting a floor on the market. Mm-hmm. And then everything's gone back up, and some of it's, you know, if you can pick out certain markets that have heated up way above the peak, and I think those are outliers in the data. Most are, you know, just kind of going up that trend line. If you go back 50 years, it's that 2-3% appreciation, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the most important thing to look at. And I really would be surprised if there's something that would happen to cause things to go back down to the 2009 low. I just don't see it happening. There's too much investor demand.
I don't see it either. I mean, there's too much investor demand. There's also too much millennial demand. Now, millennials want to buy homes, but they can't.
They do.
Because the people that are living in the homes don't want to sell them for a higher interest rate and paying more. And then builders are having a tough time feasibly putting together a price point that works because of the cost of permitting, the length of time these things are taking, contractor costs, cost of material, cost of labor. I mean, what are your thoughts on this?
I just did a video on LinkedIn about this exactly. It's looking in these numbers and maybe figuring out that there's a new normal. And that new normal is some people are deciding not to sell their house. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, you know what, I'm just going to hold on to what I have. And that's causing less, there's just less supply. The values have gone up to a level where some people can't afford because there's less supply. The builders aren't building because of permitting issues, or it's not because of lack of wanting to build or having the ability to build, but also figuring out the price points. The cost of building has been going up crazy, the cost of supplies. So all those things together cause new housing sales to go down, but the values are still staying up there. And so it's more of a new normal. So they keep talking about these housing starts and home sales. I really think it's more about a new normal. So I've said that like five times, but it's more about a new normal. It's more about looking at what's really happening and not just jumping to conclusions.
I do want to talk a little bit about these housing starts and the difference between looking at that versus the housing authorizations, which I thought was like some funny indicator to look at, because anyway, we'll talk about that when we come back. More with Noel Christopher from Renters Warehouse after these messages, and in the meantime, go check out thinkrealtyradio.com, pick up a copy of our magazine called Think Realty Magazine at Barnes & Noble. I'll be right back.
This hour is brought to you by Renters Warehouse, one of the largest, fastest growing, and highest reviewed property management companies in America. We'll be right back with more Think Realty Radio with Abhi Golhar after these messages.
Don't miss the Real Estate Note event of the year. The Paper Source Note Symposium is 3 days of learning and networking with the most experienced note investors on the planet. Discover how to buy non-performing and other real estate notes. Meet keynote speaker Eddie Wilson, president of Think Realty Radio, at the Paper Source Note Symposium, April 11th through the 13th in Las Vegas. Visit papersourceseminars.com right now and enter the discount code ThinkRealty for $50 off your ticket. That's papersourceseminars.com.
You have to play the percentages when you invest in real estate. Win the percentage game with Angel Oak Prime Bridge. Whether it's fix and flips as low as 8% or landlord financing starting at 5.5%, Angel Oak Prime Bridge wins with a customer-focused approach to your business. Go to aopbconnect.com to see how you can win at the percentage game with Angel Oak Prime Bridge. And introducing our new wholesale partner program available at aopbconnect.com. The secret to winning at the percentage game.
Attention, real estate investors. Join the nation's top pros in residential and commercial investing in Baltimore at the Think Realty Conference and Expo, April 6th and 7th. Network with industry leaders and service providers and learn how to earn a higher return on your real estate investments. The Think Realty Conference and Expo in Baltimore, April 6th and 7th. Text radio to 96270. That's radio to 96270. Or visit thinkrealty.com/Baltimore to register.
Real Estate Notes give you immediate cash flow without tenants, repairs, or property taxes. With PaperSourceOnline.com, you buy a note, you become the banker, you decide how much interest you'll earn, and bankers never get phone calls from tenants. How do you get started? Take the free e-course by Bill Mancaro of The Paper Source. Bill's been buying notes for over 30 years. Bill has the heart of a teacher and wants you to succeed. Sign up for Bill's free e-course now at PaperSourceOnline.com. That's PaperSourceOnline.com.
We're back with Think Realty Radio and your host and realty dealmaker, Abhi Golhar.
All right, we're back to the last few minutes of Think Realty Radio, Think Realty Nation. It's your host, Abhi Golhar. My guest today is Noel Christopher, Senior Vice President of Corporate Development at Renters Warehouse. So really, if you kind of smush all those words together, it's SVPCD. Noel, I think now moving forward, all of our listeners know who you are already. So I'm just going to say SVPCD and everybody will get it. I think that's what I'm going to do.
Sure.
All right.
Sure.
And then I'm going to send in my suggestion to your suggestion box via USPS saying, please give Noel a shorter title. That sounds better. Okay. That being said, before the break, we were talking about housing starts versus housing authorizations, essentially the authorization to go out and build. And there are a lot of these pundits on air, not you and me, we're significantly smarter, I'd like to think, and they're going off about this topic of authorizations versus looking at, say, permitting or starts. What is the difference? Why or should I be concerned about authorizations?
I can give you a little anecdotal story. I have a home builder that we're working with. That when you get in and I asked a specific question, and he basically said, okay, so for example, in one area of Southern Florida, they have authorization to build 100 lots, but they don't start building them until there's a demand for those specific lots and somebody wants to buy that house, or they build some spec houses. So until the house, in my opinion, until the house is actually being built, that's what is the most important thing. And those numbers are going to fluctuate. How many homes they built in 2000, to go back and compare things to 2007 or compare them to last year. I just don't think you can do that because you're dealing with a piece of real estate that is unique. Somebody builds a house on one block. You can't compare that house somewhere else. In some instances you can for data purposes, but it's so hard to nail down numbers off of one metric. And that's the other thing that we get into is that there's a difference between correlation and causation. And I've talked about this several times publicly because it drives me crazy, is that there could be a correlation between housing authorizations and a housing decline, but is it a causation? And typically it's not. So that's just a big point to think about.
Where's the housing market now? We at the beginning of the show, we talked about this looming 2025 year capstone mile marker. Everything's going to plummet. There are a lot of folks even now saying, oh, well, you know, I'm expecting a recessionary environment in late 2019, early 2020. 2020 is just going to be a terrible investing year. Why are people saying this?
Well, it depends who you're reading and what their purpose is, right? So if it's, you know, the bad news gets more press. We all know this. So mm-hmm. I think that some people are looking around trying to figure out when the next housing crash is, and they want to be the ones that say they picked it. You can analyze all kinds of data and look at housing, you know, certain, you know, people are talking about the housing bubble 2 or 2.0 housing crash and all these things. I just don't see it happening yet. I mean, it could happen. I think it's going to be much more regionalized going forward. I think we're again at a new normal, which is less home sales, which is can be tough for the real estate industry, but not tough for the market necessarily. Right. This isn't the stock market. Houses aren't companies that need to increase 10% in value or sales every year in order to be worth something. These are long-term investments when we're talking about owner-occupied homes, especially, and investment homes. They're long-term investments. So expecting these 5% plus appreciation rates is crazy. And so the articles that come out and say appreciation has gone down the most since 2012, it's down 40%. Well, it's down. That means it went from 10 to 6%. Or it went from 6 to 4%.
Right.
And that's okay.
Right. It's supposed to happen, right? It's supposed to flatten out a little bit. Otherwise what, right? Like, what's the opposite trend line? Home prices have been appreciating 10% year after year after year after year after year. Imagine if you had 10% year after year growth for a period of a decade, right? You talk about unaffordability. Well, that just became very real. And do you remember back in, I'm sure you remember this, you're just as old as I am. do you remember the dot-com bubble?
Oh, yeah.
Right before the dot-com bubble, we had the Y2K bug, right? And the Y2K bug was highly publicized as like a combination of the Mayan calendar and Nostradamus. And everybody thought that these two entities were predicting this massive crash and electricity is going to go out, the world's going to end, and some meteor that nobody can tell is going to hit planet Earth was going to hit planet Earth and destroy all of humanity. So if you're looking for something, essentially I go on that diatribe and I agree with Noel in saying this. If you're looking for negative news to back up this claim that the housing market is going nowhere in 2020, then you'll find all the news that you want, right? You can build a graph that shows housing starts declining and you can skew that graph so that the y-axis looks significantly larger than the x-axis. You can have that big red down pointy arrow. But to what end? If it's not doing that, and if it's behaving normally, then just be an investor and buy. Yeah.
And look, right now people are talking about housing decline, but the prices are still appreciating faster than inflation. So that is still an issue. Affordability is still an issue. And affordability is one of the single biggest factors. But also something I've talked about a lot is that, you know, there's a huge demand for millennials to buy houses. They can't afford to buy them. So they're going to turn around and rent a house. And they're not going to rent an apartment in an inner city. They're going to rent a house in the suburbs or a nice condo in the city. And they're probably going to pay more than what they would normally want to pay for a mortgage payment, but they can afford to do that for a lot of different reasons. And they may not be able to make a down payment, but they can afford to rent a $3,000 home in the city. So, or a condo in the city or a house in the suburbs, whatever it might be. So I believe affordability is an issue, and it's something I've always believed in. But the market will correct itself as long as the government, kind of stays out of it as far as trying to manipulate the market too much. So, even if the prices level off and they go down in some areas to adjust for an overheated market, it's okay. Seattle prices are out of control. If they go down a little bit, it's okay. Doesn't mean that a housing crash is coming. A housing crash is, I would say, it'd have to be more than 20%. Even going down 5%, appreciation staying at 1 or 2% for a while is okay, or even being a little bit flat for a little while because in some areas are overheated.
Yep.
That's okay.
It's completely normal. It's the way that the market is supposed to behave. If it doesn't behave like this, we would be crying some other type of cry, right? Like, it would be a bad situation and it would lead to more greed. It would lead to a very bad inflationary environment. And I think it would just lead to a lot of market chaos. And now you have all the expert investors who are staying out of the flipping market, and they're going into your secondary markets and tertiary markets and just buying and holding for a little while, because that's where the opportunity is right now.
Well, and that brings me to like a final kind of point here is that I was at a conference this last weekend. It was for one of the major real estate brands, REMAX, that we do some things with. And the most interesting thing about, like, for example, we're doing this platform where you can buy and sell single family rentals all over the country. And there's a lot of markets we're not in. And there's a lot of markets that realtors came to us and said, you know, I'm like, well, where are you from? They're like, Louisville, Kentucky.
Right.
I'm like, well, how's that market? They're like, man, the investor market is amazing. We just need more people to be aware of it.
Right.
And there's a lot of markets like that, those tertiary markets, that as the technology and things are changing, as there's more disruption in the real estate space, and we're part of that, and on the real estate brokerage space is part of that, because the new normal is less home sales, so you have to be more competitive. The friction in the marketplace is being reduced on a monthly basis. There's less friction to buy investment properties, to buy a home to live in. All of these things are great things for investors, and that's what the interesting part of all of this is the innovation that is happening in the what they call the prop tech space is amazing. Mm-hmm. And it is going to help with finding these niche markets that are, you know, for every market that is having an issue, for every company that closes and lays off people in one market, there's another market where it's going great. We've had great GDP the last report. I mean, this has been the best in 12 years, right? Or even more, I think. So there's great things happening. And so focus on that and let the market handle itself.
1,000%. And you know what's nuts is we just finished wrapping up 300 episodes of Think Realty Radio. So, Noel, thanks so much for doing that. You know, you were also number 200. You're 200.
I was number 200 episode. Yeah, 200 and 300.
It's so awesome. So, Think Realty Nation, so much fun. Keep rocking. You want to continue the conversation? Go to thinkrealtyradio.com and hit play on number 300. Believe me, it's a good one. We'll see you next time.
The show is over, but Abhi's expertise is available for you 24/7 at thinkrealtyradio.com.